Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Xbox Mojo. My name is Thomas and this is the last episode of the year. Yes, we got through this year too, which for many wasn't that much better than 2020. Before I get to the games of the year, I want to talk about The Gunk. Available on Xbox Game Pass since December the 16th, I've played through it and of course I won't spoil it. It's a short game. After 4 hours and 46 minutes I was in front of the final boss. I know that precisely thanks to the in-game time, which does not include cutscenes. If I look at the Xbox achievements and the statistics tab, it was almost 6.5 hours. So something between 5 and 6 hours should be correct. I tried to collect all upgrades but only managed 14 out of 15 and I only got 90% scannable objects. I could probably go to the old levels now, walk around for an hour to find the one or two scans and enough raw materials for the last upgrade. I want to say that I didn't just run through it, but also tried to discover everything in a leisurely manner. But what do you actually have to do? You take on the role of scrap scavenger Rani, who discovers what appears to be a deserted planet, parts of which are covered in a dense mass they call gunk. You explore the planet in search of riches and then, of course, unravel a mystery. Not much more needs to be said about the story. Bex is your partner and she steers the spaceship and sets up the basic camp, to which you can fast travel back at certain points in the game to manufacture and install the upgrades just mentioned. Otherwise, Rani and Bex communicate via radio and I liked their dialogues thanks to the thriving English voice acting. Playfully, The Gunk is an old-school action-adventure. In a third person, you wander through the relatively linear areas and solve smaller puzzles or look for access to the next level. The main task is to clear the gunk with your vacuum cleaner glove. Think of it like Ghostbusters or Luigi's Mansion. If you have removed an area of dirt, nature will blossom again and new paths will open up. The suction mechanism is also used to transport particular objects. You'll find big balls that you can suck up and then throw into small green pools to grow leaves that you can jump on and reach new areas. Or you can throw exploding orbs to jump certain obstacles or hit remote switches after an upgrade with a power shot. You unlock further upgrades through scans and then collect the necessary raw materials. Upgrades provide more life energy, faster drain speed or shots. This game principle does not change until the last level and may therefore be too calm and repetitive for one or the other. Because fights are rarely occur, there are only 3 or 5 different opponents and you can't do more than stun with shot and then vacuum it. After all, the controls are exact. Here and there, the camera annoys you when gunk blocks your view. I would like to point out the optics and atmosphere positively. Light effects, remarkable fauna, dark caves, and a lot of rarity is offered. The art design is also excellent. It's a shame that HDR isn't supported, which I can't understand entirely, since this alien planet would have been perfect for HDR. The gunk was fun and I found the monotonous gameplay almost, some kind of relaxing. Yes, it feels like a game that would have fit into the GameCube or PS2 generation, but I don't always need those huge open worlds that overwhelm you. 5 hours of good entertainment with the main point of criticism that there is a lack of rarity in the game, I find it perfectly fine. it would be also a great experience to play the gang with your younger kids. Excellent little game, but not a highlight of the year either. But if the developers should make a sequel and eliminate the points of criticism, an attractive franchise could emerge from it. But how was the gaming year in general? I think it's been an excellent year. Sure, Xbox had this glitch earlier this year when they were trying to double the price of Xbox Live Gold, and the press and community reacted accordingly, and Microsoft withdrew from the plans within 24 hours. The lack of availability of semiconductors and logistical problems continue to ensure that the consoles are hardly available in stores, even 1 year after launch. In principle, everything that is available is sold immediately. Nevertheless, there was a Halo Infinite limited edition version of the console for Halo's 20th birthday. We had some special editions on the controller front, like Forza Horizon 5, 20 years of Xbox, or even the Elite controller for Halo Infinite. Plus, many controllers in different colors and the reopening of the Xbox Design Lab, where you can design your controller according to your wishes. In my opinion, Xbox had an excellent E3 2021, the best in years. Of course, the takeover of Bethesda, which was completed in the spring, also helped. I'm a West Bethesda fan, and the idea of Doom, Quake, Fallout, or The Elder Scrolls becoming exclusive to Xbox and PC in the future is still surreal for me. And as early as 2022, we will see the first fruits of this. Redfall and Deathloop appear directly in Game Pass, and of course, on November the 11th, Starfield, my most wanted next year. In general, I think Game Pass is the winner of 2021. Microsoft was very reluctant to launch its own games in the first half of the year, and the gaps were then filled by thirds that appeared directly in Game Pass, such as Outriders or Octopath Traveler. But even if I look at what great third-party games have been published in the subscription service for almost the whole year. Back 4 Blood, Football Manager 2022, It Takes Two, Hades, Unpacking, The Forgotten City, and so many more. Good mix of genres and between indie games and larger productions. In addition, in the second half of the year, there were games from Xbox Game Studios such as Flight Sim, Psychonauts 2, Age of Empires 4, Forza Horizon 5, and Halo Infinite. The value of the games you could play with your Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription in 2021 was worth just over €5,500. At least that's what the loadout.com calculated based on Xbox store prices. I noticed that I always look at Game Pass first and just discover games there that I would not have bought, but still had a lot of fun with it. Game Pass is also responsible because I primarily only play the exclusive titles on PS5 and Switch, and sometimes wonder whether the PS5 still makes sense for me, since my backlog on Xbox is getting bigger and bigger. These were my Game Pass games that I have played through, or that I long played this year. The Medium, Octopath Traveler, Outriders, Scarlet Nexus, A Plague Tale Innocence, Flight Simulator, The Ascent, Art of Rally, 12 Minutes, Aliens Fireteam Elite, Psychonauts 2, Myst, The Artful Escape, Quake Remaster, Forza Horizon 5, Halo Infinite, The Gunk. I am delighted with my Series X. There are still things that can be improved on the operating system, so it's now 4K, but still without HDR. But it would be much more important to me that the sharing of video clips and screenshots will be improved. I also take so many screenshots because of the podcast, and I keep getting the message that the space is full. Then I have to upload these screenshots to OneDrive and then download them to my Mac. It all takes so long because OneDrive is terrible slow. Why can't I just plug in a USB hard drive and back up all the screenshots and clips? Why do cutting clips work so rarely and why is it highly fiddly? Then the compression on social media platforms is often so significant that it would be best not to share at all. And of course, I would like to see the achievements revised again for the new year. In-game rewards that mark 100% games as extra, like the Platinum Trophy and stuff like that. Xbox invented the system, but hasn't improved it in years, and it is time. But let's get back to the games. Before naming the best games of the year, I would first like to call my disappointments of the year. Biomutant. As much as the trailers appealed to me, I was also cautious, simply because you haven't heard any news from the game for so long, and there's a small team behind it. I feared that the project was too ambitious for the team size, and unfortunately, I was right. The superb gameplay mechanics were no longer visible in the end product. The trailer showed a clearly too positive image and the game was also punished. Lucky I didn't buy it, and if it ever ends up in Game Pass, maybe I'll give it a try. eFootball 2022. Pro Evolution Soccer became eFootball and unfortunately with it all quality of the game series disappeared. In theory, I think a free-to-play model which is constantly being expanded is not wrong for a football game, because let's be honest, some FIFAs are primarily just a squad update for the players. But the launch was a disaster and is currently an example of completely sinking a brand. In the end, that's the only positive thing about the name change, because the catastrophe is associated with eFootball and not Pro Evolution Soccer. It will be exciting to see if Konami can still have this service game or even wants to. Grand Theft Auto, the trilogy, the definitive edition. What was I happy about? The announcement and the first gameplay trailers. I thought Rockstar's change more than I expected, but then came the launch and the trilogy became a complete buggy mess. Social media was full of memes and I followed them instead of buying the game. Sure, I could allude to San Andreas in Game Pass, but I was more interested in GTA 3 and Vice City. Now I have to wait for the trilogy to be fixed, and what remains is the bland taste that Rockstar is fallible to. Last year, CD Projekt Red with Cyberpunk, and this year Rockstar with GTA. Far Cry 6 is the most significant bad buy of the year for me so far, and I was already waiting for an offer before I struck. The game doesn't do much wrong on paper, it looks good, and there is a lot to do, and then it repeats itself over and over again. Typical Ubisoft game, and I fall for it every time. I usually buy a Ubisoft game on sale, but I don't finish it because I find the gameplay boring and repetitive and the map much too big. That's how I felt with Far Cry when I first opened the map and thought, oh my god, how big is everything here and I'm only on the starting island. When am I ever going to end this? It's probably just about time that I accepted that most of Ubisoft's open world games just aren't for me. What was I looking forward to Battlefield 2042? The first trailer were great and I just wanted a Battlefield, a proper Battlefield. But with each beta, concerns grew and then a disastrous launch followed with many, many bugs. The game was simply released too early and the numerous updates that have been available since the launch don't help. But there are also problems with the content that are noticeable and are not so easily changed. The maps are too big, so you sometimes play a walking simulator. There are too few maps, too few modes, and too few variety. And the first season may not start until March. Release in spring would have been the better alternative. But EA really wanted a Christmas title and now has to be careful not to sink the brand altogether. So it's not surprising that EA announced a few weeks ago which studios will be working on Battlefield content in the future and that Vince Zampella will be the new person in charge of the franchise. The damage that was done to the brand in 2021 is entirely self-inflicted, and it's a bit sad. So those were the top 5 flops of the year, so let's now turn to the best games of the year. Since this is an Xbox podcast, only Xbox games are represented in the top 10. But I was also on the road on the multi-platform this year, and therefore I have a list of honorable mentions. The first game on the list has also been released for Xbox, namely the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, my game of the year of hearts. I haven't played an Xbox game more than this year. Okay, it's a collection of 3 games, but I did enjoy replaying all 3 Mass Effect games. Showed me again how much I appreciate this series and especially the characters. I also bought a poster directly from the BioWare store, which basically shows the cover's artwork. I found it great, and the only reason the game is not in my top 10 is that it is only a remaster. A very good remaster with many optical improvements and quality of life optimizations, but I only wanted new games in the top 10. But if you haven't played Mass Effect yet and you're also into sci-fi, you have to grab it. For me, Capcom has been one of the best publishers for years, which is crazy since they also had a long bad run at the beginning of the last generation. Since Resident Evil 7, they've been hitting various hits every year, primarily to Resident Evil, Devil May Cry or Monster Hunter. And this year with Monster Hunter Rise, Capcom gave me a good reason to fire up my Switch. Sure, I would much rather play the game in 4K 60fps on Xbox or PlayStation, but it's a Switch exclusive so far. It also looks okay for a Switch game, but I was kind of won over by the gameplay. The rope bugs are another innovation that I wouldn't want to be without. You can climb otherwise unreachable places or swing over revenants thanks to these bugs, but they can also be handy for just a little faster travel on foot. The traveling has never been so fun as in Monster Hunter Rise, especially since you can also use the bugs as bridles and use giant monsters as mounts or advice for such a short time. What the grappling hook is in Halo Infinite, the rope bugs are here. Monster Hunter remains true to the basic principle. You complete orders where you usually have to kill certain monsters or collect raw materials. Take your loot back to the village, visit the forge there and use your loot to create new weapons and armor or improve your old equipment. You simply collect plants and metals in between for potions and other items, and with better armor you will become stronger and accomplish more dangerous monsters and quests. And then the whole thing starts all over again. Sound boring? Somehow yes, and this game principle is one of the reasons why I haven't played a Monster Hunter for a long time. However, I find it immensely satisfying when all the preparation and learning of the combat patterns is crowned with success and you finally defeat the monster. What is sometimes offered here as a normal monster would be final bosses in other games, so Capcom is doing an outstanding job again, and if Monster Hunter Rise were to come to other consoles, I would rebuy it and play it through. Returnal is one of my favorite games of the year across all platforms, and it might be my favorite PS5 game so far. The atmosphere is incredible, the implementation with the DualSense is more than successful, and the gameplay is addictive. Keep progressing, unlocking upgrades, failing and starting all over. After each defeated boss, however, there are opportunities to unlock shortcuts. I hated the game and loved it and kept trying. It's also one of my most played titles of the year since I even tried my hand at the Platinum Trophy. Unfortunately, I'm still missing a few collectibles for the Platinum, and since these are random based, I've given up. In any case, it should be forbidden to randomly install collectibles in a challenging game. Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart is the other PS5 game on the list. I was happy to platinum this one, but playing through it, including the Platinum Trophy, only took around 14 hours, so it was a concise game. And anyone who has played a Ratchet & Clank game before knows how this one plays. For almost 20 years, not much has improved in this regard. If you know one Ratchet, you know them all. It's always funny when it is demanded that Gears or Halo have to change fundamentally, but then Ratchet is celebrated by the press without such changes. Now, that sounds more negative than it should be. I had my fun. Ratchet & Clank is a kid-friendly shooter and rarely has the phrase "like playing a Pixar movie" been more true than here. Great guns, great looks and sound. The portals with which you can change the dimensions directly without loading times are just eyewash and simply at fixed level points. Didn't really impress me because you've always seen something similar in a slimmed down form. My keyword there would be Titanfall 2, even if only one level was shown in two states in the end, while Ratchet loaded a completely different level. I have to admit that as impressed as I was with the overall tech, I quickly forgot about the game. But I repeat it clearly and vocally here that Xbox needs such child-friendly games. Or just such studios as Insomniac, which have simply blown out Spider-Man Remastered, Spider-Man Miles Morales and Ratchet & Clank since the launch of the PS5 and are currently working on Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine. Metroid Dread is also one of my favorite games of the year. I'm a big fan of Metroidvanias, and the fact that Nintendo just announced a new Metroid in the summer and it was released in October was a more than successful surprise for me, especially since this is basically Metroid 5 and the sequel that you had to wait 21 years for. Dread has varied gameplay and is well staged in places, but not as beginner-friendly as some wished. Backtracking is significant and in places you lose your bearings. But because discovering mysteries and new passages and upgrades and shortcuts are so satisfying, it's basically okay. Of course, it's not as epochal as the Ori series, but it's just fun. The last game I have then is Shin Megami Tensei 5. I once called it a game with a PS2 look, even if I really like the art style. The monster design in particular is excellent, and then the empty areas might not bother you as much since a large part of the game is fighting anyway. You can expect a non-beginner friendly, complex, classic Japanese role-playing game, which is somewhat reminiscent of an adult Pokemon in terms of the combat system. Tactical round battles and the constant improvement of your own demons are fun, and in times when more and more JRPGs are also using real-time battles, Shin Megami Tensei may be a welcome change for one or the other. The Switch now has a lot of good JRPGs, and I wonder if Shin Megami Tensei 5 will ever be released for PlayStation. I don't think there will be an Xbox version at all. Now let's move on to the best games of the year, and even though I've come up with an order, don't be mad if you don't like it. It's kind of my list, and the order of the titles changed for me anyway, depending on my day mood. But the fact that these 10 titles are on it has changed little in the last few weeks. You can also send me your list on Twitter at XboxMojo. Back 4 Blood, a game that I wouldn't have played without Game Pass, and that definitely has a few quirks. Unfortunately, it never reached the quality of Left 4 Dead either, but I took the game in anyway, because it just entertained me. I primarily play single-player games, so I was frustrated that the campaign could only be played in co-op. The developers have since changed that, but it was still like that back in October. As a result, I looked for groups and at the end played through the campaign and had so many great experiences, just because you played with other people. I talked about the couple flirting over a team chat or the Irish coordinating like a SWAT unit from the player who almost single-handed saved my ass in a level. Great memories, and rarely have I been so gripped by a multiplayer game. However, I must also say that it was not sustainable. After finishing the campaign, I had no desire to tackle the other difficulties, but as soon as there are campaign extensions, I will definitely start the game again. One or the other will wonder why It Takes Two is so far down in my list. That's because I haven't played through it yet, but I wanted to appreciate the art style and the great levels and ideas. As a co-op game, I can't just play through it like that, and you need the right partner, which means making appointments again. I have to admit that the levels I played were all good, but didn't spark as much as I would have liked. But if you have the opportunity to play this game in co-op, you should definitely do so. A refreshing jump and run with many new ideas. On the other hand, Destro is so far down because I haven't played it through yet. For me, the release period wasn't idle. The game came out on July 20th, but we were still fighting the effects of the flood in my home area. I played it in August and I liked the look and genre mix. The ingredients were right, but the timing was never right. So it is possible that if I had played it through, it would have ended up at the upper part of this list. It is similar with Tales of Arise. I played the demo, which didn't trigger any next-gen hype in me, and then I let the game sit for a long time, watched videos or how my sister played it, and everything I saw spoke to me. More modern look and graphic style compared to old Tales, but overall a dark mood. And I liked exploring the world, the characters, and the connection between main and side quest. Decent game for the 25th anniversary of the series, but I'd have to finish it before I could rank it higher. Hitman 3 was an early highlight of the year for me. Good stealth games are rare, and Hitman is one of the best exponents of this genre. For me, the story isn't the main focus here either, but the varied assignments and the black humor make up for it because some of the killing mechanics are simply morbid. The levels are outstandingly designed and invite you to play again and discover other possible solutions. However, you shouldn't complain about the very short playing time if you only play the levels once to get through, because the 6 missions were easily played through in a good, well, I would say 6 or 7 hours. Thanks to the sandbox, the appeal is figuring out the best way to take out your target, since there are many different approaches. Ingeniously implemented at the Dartmoor level, you can also pretend to be a detective and search for the murderer like Cluedo. This level alone is worth playing this game, but you can also get to the goal by sneaking in and completing the goal conventionally. Age of Empires 4 is also on the list for me. Good ratings, sales, and a great sequel to this old Microsoft computer game series. Don't forget that Part 3 was released in 2005, so fans had to wait 16 years. Conjuring up a successful sequel after such a long time is also something that cannot be taken for granted. Unfortunately, I could hardly play the game due to lack of a PC. I just wish I could have played it on my Mac via Xbox streaming or something. Unfortunately, that doesn't work, and whether a console version will ever appear is anyone's guess. I would wish for it because I briefly considered whether I should buy a PC just for H4, and in the end common sense prevailed and I let it be. Instead, I watched countless Let's Plays and videos. There are 35 missions in the campaign covering 300 years of human history. There are historical documentaries to get the historical background and locations. In terms of gameplay, everything is reminiscent of Age of Empires 2, which shouldn't come as a surprise. After all, this is the favorite of most players. And I think it's okay if you play it safe after such a long break. The franchise's revival was more important than innovations, and innovations can be implemented with part 5 or beforehand in DLCs. You choose one of the 8 civilizations, which differ subtly in advantages and disadvantages. Keep building your settlement, collecting wood, food, gold and stone resources, researching new technologies and building an army. According to the rock, paper, scissors principle, the fights run like in the predecessors, for example, a mixture of different units and formations make sense. Visually, there would have been more possible. Blurred ground textures are noticeable and the models are slightly low in polygons. Overall, it's functional and perfectly fine, but not more than that. I think Forza Horizon 5 is a very good game. Unfortunately, there were problems in the multiplayer, and if I'm honest, I haven't touched it for 5 or 6 weeks. All routes discovered, most races finished, 19% of signs destroyed. I had nearly 30 hours of fun, and then it was good. Likely, I won't dig it up again until the first add-on. Maybe I've played too many Forza Horizons that it doesn't grip me as much as part 2 or 3. Although I have to say that I like it better than the 4th part. The better campaign, good loading times, better map and stuff like that. Resident Evil Village is not a standout game, but it was definitely a highlight for me in the first half of the year and a rock-solid sequel to part 7. Also, the action is definitely more in the foreground. I liked the mysterious to be discovered, the variety of locations, the different bosses, and yes, the game also had a lot of great visuals. It's a shame that the castle and the giant lady occur so early in the game, and it's such a short segment. And yes, like every Resident Evil, the game weakens towards the end. But as a fan of the series, I'm happy that Capcom has saved it since 2017. Back then, Resident Evil 7 was a breath of fresh air and a surprise to me. In 2019, Resident Evil 2 Remake was one of my favorite games of the year. I'm just a prime example of how good remakes have to be. In 2020, the Resident Evil 3 Remake was still okay. It had more quirks than the remake of RE2, but I had my fun, and then in 2021, the very good Village. For a long time, Psychonauts 2 was on the way to becoming my game of the year. I've been a fan of the series since I played Psychonauts on the original Xbox in 2006 or something. In the meantime, I would never have expected a sequel, and now I'm playing this in 2021 in the Game Pass in the best console version on Xbox Series X. The story couldn't have been continued better. You can play both games one after the other, and it almost looks like a single piece. Likeable characters, a motivating collecting system, and varied powers can be leveled up. The story is sometimes sad, sometimes funny, and serious topics are taken up. I think it's awesome how mental problems are discussed here without ridiculing them. I might have wished for one or two more innovations and courage instead of an almost perfect sequel, but I'm glad that Double Fine just wanted to make a really good Psychonauts. I just love this world and the quirky characters, and I have to admit that games like this only come around every few years. So why did I only put this pearl in second place in the end? It's because of Halo Infinite's multiplayer. When Halo Infinite's multiplayer was released in mid-November, I was hooked. Back then, did 30 levels in the Battle Pass and realized that I'm pretty decent in Halo compared to other games, and so I kept playing for over 30 hours. I like almost every map and mode, and the gameplay is just to die for, whether arena or big team battle. Sure, more modes and maps would be great, and they will come with time. And currently, I only play here and then just to eventually complete the battle pass at level 100. But in the weeks leading up to the release of the single player campaign, it was just a big Halo party for me. Then the single player also inspired me, and I played it almost like Breath of the Wild. Traveling with a grappling hook is so fantastic, and I tried to look around every corner or if I could get to the next building or the next mountain to see if there was anything there. Later explore the map flying with the Banshee or Wasp, wonderful. I've always wanted to do this in a Halo game, explore a big map and take advantage of the sandbox. In contrast to Ubisoft games like Far Cry 6, the map here is much smaller and more straightforward, and also the map is not cluttered with so many icons. I probably would have tried to discover everything, but unfortunately I can't collect all Spartan logs due to a bug. But I didn't want to start all over again either, so I rushed through the campaign a little more from that point on. Due to my urge to discover every bit, I got a playing time of over 25 hours just for the campaign. I have all the skulls except one, and the one I'm missing is of course hidden in the last mission. However, you cannot currently repeat missions that have already been completed. I sincerely hope that this option will be added in 2022. But I have all the logs from the Exiles and the UNSC and most of the skins unlocked for the multiplayer. Destroying all 40 propaganda transmitters was too stupid for me, so I skipped that. The campaign itself is okay, and the story is much more intimate and smaller than its predecessor. The fact that almost everything is told in audio logs or holograms, and that a lot takes place before the actual game, will bother some people. Story levels are very linear compared to the rest of the game, which I found to be a good change. Halo Infinite is also the first Halo game to have good bosses and quite a few of them. This is the best Halo game from Free for Free Industries, and I'm already looking forward to future story extensions, which might then also show the rest of the ring and thus provide a visual change that is currently missing. In terms of gameplay, it doesn't matter if it's single or multiplayer, one of the best first-person shooters in years. In the meantime, I wouldn't have thought it possible that the developers would deliver such a strong foundation here, which you can now quickly build on for the next few years. I think the soundtrack is good, the art style is excellent, and the game is visually appealing. And it's the combination of single player and multiplayer that made Halo Infinite Game of the Year. Sure, the lack of co-op is annoying, but no other game this year managed to convince in solo mode and multiplayer. And when I think that I've played a total of over 60 hours now, it's also one of my most played games of the year. Therefore, despite various quirks, I can handle the choice. That should have been it for this week. Thank you for listening. Have a good new year. Follow me on Twitter at Xbox Mojo. The future is bright and the Mojo is coming back. Until next time, your Thomas.